Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jill, who is here to talk with us about her experience of participating in the recent practice intensive. Welcome, Jill.
Thanks, Jen.
Hey.
Hi.
So it seems like letting go and letting life was a good first topic for our year of emptying the teacup.
It was amazing.
Wasn't it perfect?
It was. It really was. Yeah. It just helped so much. It was so supportive to that practice.
Uh-huh. Say more. What was your experience?
I was thinking about my experience with it a little bit today. And, you know, I have a 9-to-5 job, and usually when I'm I get there, I'm a manager, so, you know, people are asking me questions and I'm sort of off running, and it just fit in perfectly with my daily life, which is, you know, I get this assignment and I, you know, read it and I just kind of hold it and I go, okay, well, I'm going to see what comes up around that. And then I get these reminders, that sort of, and how I experienced the reminder was, you know, have you seen this, or are you, or has conditioning gotten hold of your practice? You know, and I get a chance to look at either one. Like, I could look at what was sort of being asked in the prompt, or I could see, like, you know, what is there something that is around this that's sort of preventing me from participating, essentially.
I love that. It's perfect. It reminds me of Sherry talking about commitments, that, in fact, the biggest part of keeping commitments is not so much the commitment itself as everything we get to see around what happens with either keeping it or not keeping it.
Exactly. So, go ahead.
Well, before we go on, I just wanted to underline something you said, which is that, you know, it fit in. I have this 9-to-5 job. I'm a manager, so we can all kind of plug in what that looks like, right? busy day. And then your next sentence was, and so this fits perfectly with my life. And I just had to smile because it's just opposite of what I'm sure, at least from my experience, conditioning is angling for. It doesn't fit at all perfectly with my life. I'm lazy, right? I hate this. I'm too busy. And this is just one more thing to do. Mm-hmm. And so to bring that attitude of mind of, no, this is perfect. I want this reminder in the middle of my busy day is just, wow, that's starting off on the right foot right there.
Exactly. And I had this incredible experience with that one day. It was like, you know, the 1,000 things were coming at me at once. And I got an email prompt, and I sort of sat for a minute, and I thought, you know what, I can't do a recording right now. I don't have time. And then I thought to myself, but you know what, if I just walk out the office door and go in that corner by the plant, I bet I could do one for 15 seconds. And I did that, and I came back to my desk, and it was like my whole world had changed. I mean, it was really, really, really phenomenal. So that was like just a little, like, I had that experience daily with this practice. I mean, it really, really was like exactly what this person needed to just support, like, being present with all that we deal with throughout the day.
I have such goosebumps with that story because it completely underlines that it's about the process, not the content. What's the point? 15 seconds? I mean, what are you gonna see in 15 seconds? You know, just skip it. Just keep, and then you're, but doing that, not, I mean, there's so many things in it, right? Not believing the voice, being willing to do what life is dropping in to do. I mean, that right there changes everything. And you said it. In that moment, your world was completely changed.
Yeah, it's sort of like, and that's what I love about this practice, is it's really asking, like, okay, you know, this is a practice, how can I experience this as a practice opportunity, you know? Yeah. And because I'm all about, you know, I used to sort of think that practice was over here and my life was over here, but actually practice is just living my life and letting Jill be Jill to the fullest. Like, practice is my life, you know? So it's just finding these ways to experience it that way has been like the biggest thrill of my practice.
Wow, that is so fun. As you were talking, I got this image of, so the practice is pouring out of the teacup, Jill within quotes, so that the teacup can be just completely filled with Jill that is the unique expression of life.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's been, and thanks so much to the facilitator. Like and whoever set it up, like I loved the email reminders. Like those were incredibly, incredibly supportive because again, it was, for me, it was about like, I really aspire to practice it as like, okay, you know, can I encounter what is being pointed at in this email today? You know, so it would be like this email, you know, I almost felt like I was like deep sea diving and, you know, it was sort of like, okay, you know, try and see an octopus today. And so I would like go down in there and kind of like look around for an octopus and see, but it was so helpful to have these little prompts and be like, so are you looking for the octopus? You know, like, how's it going? Yeah. You know, and sometimes I'd be like, I see a sea turtle, I see this, I see that, you know, because at practice we'd see all sorts of stuff. And sometimes it really was like, oh wow, I saw this, but you know, it was really the encouragement to look and to look for just a certain type of, you know, what was in each day's email was great.
Yeah, so in what you're laying out, it sounds like so many processes supported in that. So first of all, just awareness, right? So when you're looking for something, you're very aware.
Mm-hmm.
And your awareness is going to be expanded because you don't know where that octopus is going to come
from. Exactly.
Right? It might be in your right peripheral vision, your left, it might be under, it might be above, right? So you kind of have to have that expanded awareness. And then noticing everything, the sea turtles, the urchins, the whales, and that staying with it, that tenacity of like, okay, but I haven't seen the octopus. I really want to see the octopus. And the curiosity, where is the octopus?
Huh. Yeah.
Is it hiding?
It was really fun. It was really fun. And it felt, and you know, and they're also, I don't know how to say this, but it felt like, I don't know, whatever sort of came up in the email, like I managed to see, you know, so
yeah, exactly.
It's sort of, you know, it's all there, you know.
It's all there.
It's
exactly.
All there for us to see, you know.
Exactly. And to me, as I was kind of looking over the assignments as a whole, they're so, in fact, I might even go back and kind of compile them because when I was looking at this, I saw how, gosh, as a collection, it's really sort of a roadmap of how to let go and let life.
Yeah.
Right? So it's reviews that get in our way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to control that gets in our way. It's, and then offering that alternative, you know, the improv, the not indulging reviews, you know, accepting the perfection of life, not indulging urgency, all those things that are big places to look in terms of how does that teacup get filled? How can we assist ourselves in emptying it?
Yeah. And that these things that we're looking at are assisting, yeah, exactly what you're saying. And like reviews are the thing that comes between us and experiencing that. So all these little things that are pointing to like, actually, this is stuff that, I don't know, for me, it's that, you know, that thing that has been said in practice about like, just, you know, you can't transcend what you don't encounter. So in some ways it's
right.
Like, okay, here's an invitation to encounter it, to see, you know, to present me with that fork in the road. Like, am I going to come up against am I going to go with the resistance to it, or am I going to go with, you know, what life is offering?
Another point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's beautifully put, because then, so if urgency was the urgency day, right, then instead of quote, trying not to be urgent, right, because that's not the right spiritual thing to do. In fact, it's that old, instead of being the hunted, we become the hunter. And now we're looking for the urgency.
Mm-hmm.
So when the urgency comes up, it's it's not a, oh, here I am being urgent again. It's a right. Rubbing, there's the octopus. I saw it.
Exactly.
There's that excitement, enthusiasm, and our relationship with it has completely changed.
Yeah. Really marvelous.
Really marvelous. So we're up against the 5 o'clock hour, at least here in the Pacific time zone. So anything else, Jill, that you wanted to add in before we end?
I just deep gratitude, and it's always a privilege to participate in these. I get me out here floating in the world, like it just really it anchors me to practice in these, and it's such a small thing, like 3 emails a day, but it really is it's all I need really to keep
really.
Practice alive in my life. So
stay alive in my life. Nicely put. And thanks for your generous participation this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Jill.
You too. Bye bye. Bye, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Sherry. Bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jill. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, too. It's a great life.
And then when we hear these wonderful reminders of exactly why it's so wonderful for us, because we have all this beautiful practice that we get to do together, it just makes it all very lovely, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. And there were so many wonderful points and tips in that conversation. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I loved that question of how can I experience this as a practice opportunity. That's just so helpful.
Yeah. It puts everything in perspective, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because if that's what we're doing, and then the point of we go from being kind of victimized by conditioning to being on the hunt, looking for this example. There's this little thing about in practice about practice, and I'm going to look for that and look at that today, and it just becomes exciting instead of and energizing instead of that awful what conditioning wants to do with us, which is the I'm never going to get this. It's never going to be all right. I'm never going to understand it. What's the matter with me? Everybody else can do this. I can't. We go from that to, I have a project. There's a thing that I'm looking for, that I'm going to see. Oh, yay.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
And yes. And I have announcements.
I bet you have some announcements. No. Let's hear what else is going on. Because now that we've established how much fun it is to practice together, what other opportunities are available to us?
Yes. Well, folks can join you, Sherry, and Sangha in a new email class entitled Enneagram and Relationships beginning May 13th.
That's right, and it's fun because we have figured out some new angles with which to explore the Enneagram and explore relationships. So two of our favorite topics.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
This class will focus on how suffering is created and maintained in our most challenging relationships, and how awareness can help us move towards clarity, freedom, and authentic connection.
Sounds way better than what most of us were conditioned to do in relationships, huh?
Yes, exactly. The Jataka Tales Retreat is May 2nd through 7th in North Carolina. It will use the marvelous stories of the Buddha's incarnations to explore the antidotes to the three poisons, which are greed, hate, and delusion.
They are, aren't they?
Yes. This retreat with Sherry and Ashwini offers yoga, meditation, delicious meals, guidance with you, Sherry, and time to relax in the beautiful grounds of the sanctuary in the Pines.
Mm-hmm. A gorgeous spot not to be missed in our retreat repertoire.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And to do the compassionate and courageous work of freeing oneself from the ravages of conditioning and self-hate, register now for the foundational There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat in North Carolina, and that's June 30th through July 7th.
Another good time.
Yes, and this retreat is perfect for beginners and can also be repeated any number of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In fact, like so much of practice, or we could say as with so much of practice, we do something and then a period of time goes by and we do the same thing again and we realize, oh, that's not the same thing and it's not again. I'm actually a different person, and this is a completely new and different experience.
Yes. So
we have another one of those coming up later, the What You Practice retreat, which is an all-time favorite of mine. And that's such a – I hope when people come across that, they'll approach it with from that perspective, that I was one person when I did that the first time. I'm going to be a completely different person this time, and I want to see what that retreat was really about.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That reminds me of that quote. I think it's from your teacher, where everything is exactly the same, just completely different.
That's right. Yes. And sometimes he would say, everything is completely the same, only 2 feet off the ground. Giving it as a sense of as we change and as we open up and our practice expands and our hearts expand, then everything just moves us to this wonderful, different orientation to the very same life.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Genius, genius. And a reminder that we are on bamboozle number 3, which is fear, and the assignment for week 4.
Mm-hmm. Flying through these bamboozles, aren't we?
Flying through them. And for these and all other practice opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, and I see that many of you do, you can make guest show by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is really helpful. Okay, Sherry, let's get started.
Here we go.
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Who's this?
This is Rochelle. Okay, let's
see. Oh, hi, Rochelle. Oh, you do have feedback. I even heard your feedback.
Yeah.
Are you on speaker?
How's that? Is that better?
Way better. Perfect is that.
Sounds good. Yeah. Let's get rid of the feedback. Well, hello. I am doing fine. This is Rochelle from Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Very
it's
good.
It's great to hear your voice. What's going on?
Well, I have had a class on Tuesdays, and so I have not had the opportunity to call in that much. But this is a perfect day to have this opportunity to call in. I have been working around some content, and even in the Socratic Method class, this was some of the things I was working around. even through my past two reflective listening buddy quarters, this was some of the things I was working around regarding work.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, actually, I had to let go of one of my employees.
Ooh.
And I have been...
Painful.
Yeah, it's painful. It's painful. And, my gosh, just such material for conditioning. And
mm-hmm.
really, for a while now, have been trying to make it work. And it wasn't working. And trying to work with it, because you don't want to fire people. I don't want to fire people.
No.
And the market, job market is hard. And there was also part of conditioning telling me that I was being a perfectionist.
Unfair.
And too much. I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah. No, I said I was wondering if it was telling you you were being unfair or too harsh.
Yes.
Or
oh my gosh, it's been telling me that I'm being unfair. That there's a problem with me. And then it would do the duality. It's been doing the duality thing for weeks, and I know that it's duality. I knew it was duality. Well, you should fire her and do something else. Well, you know, if you fire her,
you can't
that
fire her. That
yeah,
is
you
so
can
cool.
Fire her. She's nice and she's sweet, and you know she's got family issues and things like that. I mean, it's going to be really hard for her if you fire her. And then on the flip side, it's like, oh, no, she's done this again, and it's wrong. And just bat me back and forth, and then procrastination.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the big bamboozle book all in this context.
You're living it.
Yeah, I'm living it. It's procrastination. Well, you can't do it now because it's almost Easter, and it's really mean to fire somebody just before Easter. And you can't do it, and just all these reasons. And then it finally kind of sunk in that it was unkind to continue this because she was frustrated because really what was needed for the job was just out of her ability to do. And I was
mm-hmm.
frustrated because there's no amount of training and working with it that's going to change that. And it was giving conditioning a lot of material daily,
yeah.
throughout the day. And conditioning's like, oh, you're practicing around it and not to be angry, not to be frustrated and that type of thing. And really it was just it having an opportunity to talk to me all day long, every day. And it was just
yeah.
unkind all the way around. And so finally I decided, okay, this is enough. This is clearly not performance, this is not working, and it's hard, but today I finally did it. And so it just, and then after doing it, I mean, you know, you worry about how people have been accepted, and she was kind of real quiet, and but she was okay, or at least I thought she was okay. But we both knew it just wasn't working, and so I will practice around, you know, kind of the fallout, because conditioning is telling me, oh, you're an awful person, you're so mean, and, you know, what is this going to mean for our family and all this kind of stuff. And so the conversation goes on, regardless
yes.
of what goes on. I mean,
yes.
conditioning always
yes.
has something to beat me over the head about. And so
yes.
I'm now at a point where I'm like, it's done, it's over. It was a good business decision. It needed to be done. Let it go.
Yes. Well, and you know, I think your point is such an important one, that she knew it wasn't working.
Yes.
You know, there's the assumption that if we just keep going on with things the way they are, that's better, that's kinder. But that's not necessarily the case. Because
yes.
if she knows it's not working, she feels bad. She feels, you know, it feeds inadequacy in us if we feel like we're not being able to do the job that we're getting paid to do. And so to just have the strength to call it
yeah.
with loving kindness and compassion and understanding, no hard feelings. Nobody has to feel bad. this is just not a good fit.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And
yes.
And hopefully she understood that, and or she'll get there or that sort of thing. And we hope, of course, we really hope. And looking at our own lives, this, I bet there's none of us who wouldn't say that it's our experience that no matter how things look in the short term, over the long haul, those kinds of things free us up, help us to move on, make different and better choices.
Exactly. It helps me move on and the business move on. It helps her move on because I know
mm-hmm.
that she's extremely stressed and anxious. And and not feeling bad about it because, you know, the human resources things, what have you, do all of this documentation and all of this blame and you know,
right.
Losing with calls and all that kind of stuff. And it just seemed awfully just mean to me, you know, unkind.
Yeah.
It's like it's
oh,
it's
it is.
Yeah.
It is. Because here's the thing. You and I are in some kind of a relationship. I work for you or, you know, you're my neighbor or, you know, whatever it is that's going on with us. And you don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. Whichever one of us doesn't want to do that anymore. And so what we're required to do is come up with what is wrong with the other person in order to stop doing what it is that we're doing. And it's just an assumption, such a deep conditioned assumption, that it has to go that way. That if there weren't something wrong with the other person, you would stay in the situation. But that's not true.
Exactly.
It's not true at all. There's nothing wrong with her. It just wasn't a good fit for the job. That's
exactly.
all.
Exactly.
And so to try to come up with the something wrong, that to me is the cruel part.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
well,
I was
otherwise
like,
it's just how it is.
It's just how it is. It is the process and the way you train. Some of it's just very cruel. And I'm like, she's doing the best she can. It's not
mm-hmm.
what I need for this position, and I don't think we need to go through, you know, beating her over the head, her being angry, me being angry, and those kind of feelings when it's just like it's not working, and leave it. It's just not working, and we go from there. And just the whole point of this business or just this life is that it all comes under practice, and the whole subtitle to this office is compassionate care. And it is for women, okay, because I'm a gynecologist. But it also is compassionate care for women, but it's not just the patients, but also the staff for, you know, the provider. It, you know, it's supposed to be compassionate. And I just came to the conclusion that this just is not compassionate for anybody involved. And the way in which I end it needs to be compassionate as well, or try to be compassionate. And so, I know it's hard. I know she's having a hard time, but she accepted it because she knew that it was, you know, kind of time.
The right thing. And if you had another job for her that would be a good fit for her, you would have moved her into that job. You didn't have one.
Exactly.
If you knew of somebody else who needed somebody and she would be a good fit, you'd be happy to give her a really good recommendation so that she could go do that job.
Exactly. And there were parts. Yeah, and there were parts in the past where she was a good fit. It worked for a while with a certain set of circumstances, but the circumstances have changed. And and even with the information I told her, I said, I'm very grateful for the service you've provided in the past. I really am very grateful. Just moving forward, you know, we just don't need your services. I put that in there and things, but it's something.
It's hard. It's painful. And for us just to accept that, too, it's really hard. We can feel all of those feelings and it can still be all right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? I'm sad. I wish it had gone a different way. I wish it, you know, if it could have, it wasn't, it didn't. Here we are. This is what we've got. There are all of these feelings around it, and it's still perfectly fine the way it is.
Exactly, exactly. And not let conditioning say it means anything bad or wrong about me, about her, about it is what it is, and not let conditioning get in there and start drumming up stories about, you know, I'm not doing a good job, everything's falling to pieces, you know, whatever it wants to talk about.
Right, exactly. And it always has something it wants to talk about, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's got all these karmic cycles and, you know, trying to say, oh, this is what's going on with her and, you know, all these assumptions and, you know, she needs to be a different person and wants to change somebody to somebody they're not, and try and fix her so that it works out. And I'm like, really? You know, let it go.
Yeah, so, let it go. Exactly.
Yeah, let it go. It's interesting that you're coming up with a class on Enneagrams and relationships.
Uh-huh.
Because one of the stories conditioning came up with was I'm an Enneagram type, I think one, if I remember correctly. And so
you like things to be done right and you're a little bit of a perfectionist, that kind of thing?
Exactly. And I'm in healthcare. I mean, you know, things not being done right is a concern for the patient,
problem.
And they trust you to
mm-hmm.
take good care of them, type of thing. And so just the situation was really, I really saw my Enneagram type. And so part of condition was saying, well, it's not her, it's you because you're Enneagram type one and you're a perfectionist and nobody can meet your standards and, you know, firing somebody is not going to do away with the fact that you have just impossible standards. And I really had to look at what I was requiring and things like that. And I finally had to say, well, I do have high standards, but some of these are just basic requirements, and I don't think that's too high to expect. But I really, for a long time, thought that I was getting the story back from conditioning that you can't fire her because there's nothing wrong with her. It's you. It's you.
Yeah.
You just...
Yeah.
And so it's interesting how conditioning will use practice and really beat you over.
Yeah. It'll use anything. But, you know, the point that you make is a really important one for all of us. Because with practice, what we're doing, I had a friend in practice for years, and we trained together in the monastery where I trained. And somebody would say something to her. Critical, sort of along the lines of what conditioned mind says to us, and she would listen to it, and she would say, well, okay, I will look and see what of that is true for me. And she would, right? So she just as you did. So the voices are accusing you of firing this woman because you have impossibly high standards. And instead of just turning to conditioning to get a, well, no, that's not true, there really is something wrong with her, the other side of the coin, you took that opportunity to really look at that. No self-hate, I'm going to project, no self-hate, but just, I've been accused of this thing, I want to see what of that is true for me. Is that what's going on? And you looked at it, and what you got to is, I don't think so. I think it's okay that I have these standards for the business I'm in, for my patients, and it's okay. And I feel it's my duty to provide for the business, for my patients and me, the very best person I can find to do this particular job. If I'm wrong about that, if it really is just that conditioned mind takes over and picks at people until they, you know, I get to the point where I'm going to fire them, then I'll know, because that'll happen over and over and over again. And since I'm paying attention, I'll see it. But right now, I've looked at it, and this is what I've come to, and this is what I'm doing, And I feel good about that because it's the best I can do right now, and now I'm going to let it go.
Yeah, and that is so wonderful because that's my recording practice. That's exactly uh-huh. what I'm recording. This is what it's saying about me. And is that true? And really mm-hmm. listening back to really listen to see. And so it's like...
And I don't think it is.
Yeah, and I don't think it is.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, but it's that whole process, that habit of saying, okay, I'm hearing this, and I record it, and I do reflective listening, and then like, well, wait a minute, you know, these are the requirements of the job, and I don't think that I'm being a perfectionist. There really is something here, type mm-hmm. of thing. But that process, I mean, it is when I get to that place of being worked up and conditioning is beating me, I mean, around the head and you know, telling me horrible things about myself or about somebody else, that recording and listening and going through that process, okay, let me see, that mm-hmm. kind of curiosity.
Bring
that
the mentor in. Let's get a second opinion.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the gift of practice. And that's what I'm striving for, and to eventually come to a place to make a decision and be okay with it and mm-hmm. and feel like it came from a place of center rather than from mm-hmm. a place where conditioning has beat me into a corner or from, you know, getting caught yeah. in duality. And so it is so helpful and such a better place to approach this. And so everything is under practice, and even yeah. hiring people as well as firing yeah. people, and then yeah. how I look at that and the criteria for it. Mm-hmm. And so it is all part of practice and trying to be compassionate yeah. regardless, yeah. even
yeah.
if it's hard.
That's so important because, as Jill was talking about earlier, conditioning has so much success with an awful lot of people because life gets divided up into, well, this is what I do in my life. This is work, and these are my relationships. That's money. That's healthcare. That's children. That's, you know, those are the real things. Then over here, I have practice. I do practice, and maybe I go on a retreat once a year, or, you know, I tune into the radio show, or I meditate, or whatever I do, and that's practice. But when we get to the point of, no, every minute of my life is practice. And then I'm going to turn to practice to assist me through all of the events and issues of life. Now I've got some support. Now I've got some compassion and loving kindness on my side. And now everything is gonna get better for me and for everybody else.
Yes.
So thank you for that. That was a great demonstration of how we can use practice in everyday circumstances, and especially how we don't need to let conditioned mind take over our practice and use practice against us. So
I greatly appreciate it, Sherry.
Oh, me too. Thank you, Rochelle. And I understand I'm going to see you before long, so I'm pretty excited about
that. Yes, I'm going to the retreat here in North Carolina. I'm so excited.
I know, me too. All right. Thank you, Rochelle. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rochelle. Yes, that was quite a fascinating conversation, Sherry. Just great.
Yeah, good how-tos in there, huh?
You, totally, totally practical
yeah.
and kind and sensitive and just very loving all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And now we're going to hear from our sponsor, Sherry, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Susan in L.A.
Hello, Susan.
Can you hear me all right?
Can hear you, yes.
I'm walking barefoot in a park, and it's teeming with life, so it's nice out.
Oh, these long days. Aren't they lovely?
Yeah, it's just wonderful. So it was interesting hearing Rochelle's story. It was like a case study. You know, like if you go to school, they give you a case study. So I just learned a lot just listening to her applied practice. It was interesting when I was thinking about making this call. I just did the practice intensive, you know, the prompts and that whole thing. And I was sitting in the park bench thinking, okay, what am I going to talk about? Well, what about this? No, that's not important. Well, you really don't, you know, the whole conversation. And then it dawned on me, wow, I'm doing the rehearsal. And then I thought, yeah, and that will be followed immediately afterwards by the performance review. And it's no wonder I get anxious, you know.
Yeah. So when actors are preparing for a part, they have somebody do their lines with them, right?
Right.
And so what you just described is, for most of us, the person doing our lines with us is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, right?
Right.
And it's not, you know, I don't say a line and then it gives me a different, you know, it's working with me. It's working against me, right? So whatever I come up with, it's going to try to twist that just a little or a lot so that it's going to provide some misery. Right, and then as you say, after the performance, here come the reviews. So bookends, right? Gets us before, gets us after. And a lot of people, in fact, report gets us during, because they're trying to have a conversation with somebody, and all the attention is on the voices in the head.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about how negative it was. It was like, it was, something's wrong, not enough with anything I was going to say or talk about.
Yep.
But I,
yep.
You know what, had I not done that intensive, I wouldn't have realized that that just wasn't how things are. Do you know what I mean? It was like just enough of a gap to go, oh, I'm doing it. I can't believe it. Here, you know, about practice, I'm doing it. So
yes.
That was worth
because
like
it. Because it feels so normal, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And yeah, somebody calls attention. Go ahead, sorry.
No, had you not said what you said, I wouldn't have thought to look at how negative it was. It was just kind of like, you know, a fair critical evaluation instead of, I didn't hear anything nice in any of it. It just made me scared, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and until somebody points it out to us, which is the wonderful part about practice, right? Somebody brings our attention to something, and then suddenly we can recognize it for what it is. But before that, it's just normal. It's like growing up in a household where everybody bickers all the time.
Right.
You know, it's just normal. It's just how things are. And then we get away from that, or we get around people who are kind, and suddenly we think, oh, this is a different way to be.
Yeah, and not only is it normal, but it has, as I looked at it, sort of this should. Like, oh, I have to practice, rehearse, and then I have to review, because how else am I going to be a better person if I don't do that?
We certainly can't trust the intelligence that animates us to do a good job with our life. Right? We need to turn to karmic conditioning for some solid coaching.
It's true, though. I mean, when I was doing it during the week, I was like, well, ask me to jump off a cliff instead. It felt like that. Like, what am I going to trust here? It could go wrong. And just that glimpse of freedom.
Yeah.
That there really, yeah. I didn't know there was a choice.
Yes.
And I was willing to take the risk.
Yes. Yeah. Because in most situations, what are we talking about here? So that voice in the head makes it sound like we are just in hideous danger at every turn. Because we could do something wrong. We could make a mistake. And then you stop and look at it and say, what are we talking about here? What on a daily basis, what kind of major, you know, the president isn't calling me to ask whether we should push the button. It's not like that. It's just these little, what am I going to talk about on open air? Well, how about if I just get there and talk about whatever life prompts me to talk about and just see what happens?
I mean, even if I hadn't gotten on, the whole setting up to talk and all those things was a workshop in and of itself, you know, and the preparation and seeing, and because of that class, seeing the process differently than I had seen. I mean, when I call most of the time, I always think about like Apollo 13, that line about Houston, we have a problem. So like I'm calling the mothership, except it's Houston, we don't have a problem, but I'm all out here.
We're all fine.
we're good, but we're kind of a little bit in outer space here. And just
And what you glimpsed was the freedom of not listening to that system make problems where there aren't any. You know, if it just came in and told us when there was actually something we needed to do, but it never does. It just yammers on endlessly about what isn't a problem. And then when we're actually in a situation where it could be helpful to have some good, solid advice, it doesn't say anything because it doesn't have any.
That's true. That's real. In situations that have actually been emergencies in my life, this whole other
it's nowhere
person
to be found.
Shows up. Yeah, that voice is not there. This whole other person just knows what to do and does it and doesn't think about it. You know, it's just,
And that's where we want to live all the time,
person. I know. It's just glimpsing and trying to hold on to it. I mean, just, you know, the fact that you're there and I can read and talk because it's easy to forget, you know, and just kind of, and keep it.
Well, we get talked out of it. Right?
Yeah,
we literally get talked out of it.
That same voice.
Because it's yammering away, and it keeps us from realizing, I don't have to listen to that, and if I don't listen to that, I'll be here in the present, and I'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like giving up, and it isn't a best friend, but it's been sort of an imaginary companion for a long time. So, you know, I got to find other companions besides that voice to talk to.
And life is the most delightful companion of all.
So I actually have one thing, and it's something I'm looking at, and it's sort of this crossroads, or I don't know what it, you know, I've got the thing on my phone with the flip the coin thing, which is wonderful, and that whole thing about decisions. But what I'm looking at is I can cause myself, or, well, somebody causes myself to suffer a lot around some of the most, seems like, smallest decisions. And I'm trying to discern between sort of my intuition, like, okay, you've done this before, do it again, it's going to be painful, it's going to be suffering, versus it's just the voices in my head causing me to suffer over something that's not that material. Like, where does intuition and past experience come into play? I don't know, something about following my... Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do. And the to me, the key to the whole thing is realizing that our best option is being with life in the moment, because we can never know anything about anything. So we really have to be prepared for anything, and the best preparation we can have is to be present with life in each moment. Because even if it's intuition, even if it's experience, they still have nothing to do with this moment.
Because it could be different.
Yes. And in fact, what we see is it almost always is. The reason that people think things are the same is because we're so trained not to pay attention. If we're actually paying attention, we see that each moment is completely different from any other moment. But if we're looking to conditioned mind and it's telling the same stories, then it seems like life is the same. But it's not. So if I'm getting ready to do something, and I have, so maybe somebody was talking about this the other day. You know, I'm going to go into surgery, and I've had a similar surgery before, and it went this way. Well, then, it doesn't have anything to do with this one, right? And not realizing that, not accepting that, and coming to terms with that is the source of the suffering, right? Because the voices make me afraid about everything from the last time because it really hurt and I didn't do well afterwards with those drugs and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And I've probably gotten some statistics on all the people who died under similar circumstances. And so the voice is just revving up the anxiety, right? And and then I go into the situation in a state of fear and dread and that sort of thing. And then something completely different happens. I'm not there for that because I'm busy living in this imaginary world that the voices are creating for me. So nothing good came of any of that. Whereas if I realize I have no idea, doesn't matter what happened last time, this is a completely new moment, it doesn't, the surgery has the same name. It could be the same doctor, the same hospital, the same everything. If we get it, that it's still all completely different, then we can go into it with an attitude of mind of, okay, here we are. Let's be present for anything.
Yeah, there's a lot more, I don't know what the word is, things open up.
Yes.
Which is exactly wonderful and scary, too, at the same time, because I thought, oh, wow, here it is again. I really want to control this, you know,
yes,
if it's repeatable.
I know something about this.
Yeah, I know something about this process. Like, well, I can, if I can predict it, I can control it. And yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
And then we step back a little and realize, oh, that is utter hogwash. I don't know anything about anything. There is no such thing as control. Let's just forget all of that. Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember if it was you. I think of this quote. It was some, I don't remember. I think you said it, this thing about what people don't get is that we're actually racing 100 miles an hour off a cliff. That's the bad news. But the good news is there is no ground.
Oh, my goodness.
When you talk, that's the feeling I get of sort of.
Yeah.
That,
and
in
so
a way,
we might as well enjoy it, right? That, I mean, that's the bottom line of that.
Yes, yes. So you think you're going to crash and burn because it's scary to hit 100 miles an hour off a cliff, but there is no ground. It's that feeling of groundlessness somehow. That's,
yeah, yeah.
That's
so that's when in Zen we would say, so just take a step up.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl.
All right, thank you.
Different perspective for me. Thank you.
Take good care.
This is Paul checking out. Bye.
All right. All right. Good night, Susan.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna calling.
Well, hello. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm good. I'm wow, my heart is beating fast now. And
very alive.
And I'm very jet-lagged, so I'm in Germany right now. Visiting my family, and I just can't sleep, so I'm calling. So it was very
in the middle of the night?
Talk show, yeah.
Wow. Well, how's that visit going?
It's going, it's pretty good this time. Visiting my family, I just feel like, hold on, my heart is beating so fast. I have to wait for a second. Let's see what I want to talk about. I think, first of all, I'm so thankful for the radio talk show and this practice. So I really can deal with everything much better than before.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really good. It's when we get into those kinds of situations that we can suspect, even though we don't know, based on our past experience, we're not going to be at our best, right? And and we see what practice has done for us and how much we can count on practice, and it's there for us, and our lives are different because of it. And that's it's a wonderful experience to have, right? Because the voices would say, to practice that well, or you haven't been practicing that much, or whatever. We see ourselves in those kinds of circumstances, and we say, well, actually, I must have been practicing because practice is really coming through for me.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And then. But also I feel the first time, that's a weird thing to say, but a little bit more power, just that I can decide, what I want to take on from my mom, for example, or even my dad. That's a lot of content and not talking so much in process, but I just feel like even if I want to be really compassionate and everything, maybe just because they're my parents, I feel like I have to protect myself, really. If anybody would meet them, they're really nice people, and nobody really knows maybe the relationship I have with them, or mm-hmm. they have with me, but that's just from my mom's side. Or it's still hostility, but it's very hidden. So I wonder, for myself, I probably would choose not to have that relationship anymore, but I feel like a lot of the family outer happiness or whatever is dependent on that I once in a while come here for visiting or just for my brothers and maybe for my dad. So I basically just do it for that, I feel like. But, yeah, I'm wondering also, what do people owe their parents? or uh-huh. all their family.
Yeah, that's really a tough one, isn't it? And so when you look at that, you feel, if I'm understanding what you're saying, that you feel an obligation to go there, that it's kind of the right thing to do for your brothers or your father, but it's really difficult with you and your mother, and so you feel like you have to protect yourself, especially with her.
Yeah, and even with my dad too, and it feels like with my aunts, I mean my mom's sisters, and even with one of my brothers a little bit, but they don't mean anything bad. I mean they aren't mean. I think the most comes from my mom, yeah, from my mom. I would say.
And so,
and I know I'm projecting, and that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but does it feel like you can take care of yourself? Does it feel like you know how to be with them?
Yeah.
You know, so and then be able to come back to you and to come back to center and do your recording and listening and take care of yourself? Does it feel like you can do that?
Yeah, I think I actually could do that more because, yeah, I noticed I haven't really recorded and listened since I'm here.
Okay, oh, all right, good.
I have listened, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do that too. It's not like they drag me anywhere. I can go in a room, yes.
Yes, so okay. So that's really important, right? That's really important because what conditioning, what the voices would have you do is not take care of yourself. And then talk to you constantly about what your family is doing and how you feel, and you know that whole conversation that goes on. What do you owe your family, and why do you come here anyway? And well, you should, but it's really hard, and that whole thing. When the opportunity to me is to be in a set of circumstances and do the best that you can, which you're going to do, right? When you're with them, you're going to be just as sweet and kind and compassionate as you can possibly manage. And then you're going to go to your room, and you're going to use the practice tools that you have to come back to yourself, to take care of yourself, so that you can approach it as a retreat and make it through, get back on that plane, and let yourself feel good about what you were able to do, how you were able to be. And then the next time you go, you'll go with that same attitude of, this is a retreat. This is a way to clean up a whole bunch of karma, right? So I'm going there. I am, because I don't know how much I owe my family, and I don't know what the right thing is, and I don't know any of that. But I know I'm going. I'm going to be with my family. I'm going to see everything that I see. I'm going to do the best that I can do, and I'm going to practice being present with myself, taking care of myself, and being as kind and compassionate to all as I possibly can. And over time, with that approach, you'll see the transformation in you.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, they may appear to change right along with you. We never know how that'll happen. But you'll see the transformation in you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I have already. So that I don't have to react. And I'm learning more also to have my energetic space a little bit. I mean, just by doing you know, simple visualization exercises or something. Because otherwise, I just feel like, yeah, I don't even have my own energy or my own space.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And that's your practice, isn't it? So you don't have to worry about what your mother's doing or your father or your brother or your aunts or anybody else. You just don't have to worry about it because they are doing whatever they're doing and being however they are, and that's their karma, as we say. What you're doing is practicing coming back to yourself and being present, taking care of the human being, choosing compassion and loving kindness for all, doing the best that you can, not listening to the voices, not getting caught up in that conversation, that's your business, right? That's what you have an opportunity to do.
Yes. Okay,
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I also feel guilty, or if I just kind of have to set my boundaries or whatever, I feel kind of guilty about that, because then I can feel the pain from them that I just have. I can't really help that, unfortunately.
No, and the guilt is absolutely a waste of time, because what I predict you're going to practice increasingly is, this is what is true for you, okay? And you'll present that to them with an open-hearted, loving, kind, compassionate attitude, okay? So, I love you like crazy, Mom. I got to go for a walk, okay? I love you guys. I'm so happy to be here with you, and I need to go meditate right now.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. And then say it again.
It's difficult for me to have sometimes those feelings, and I feel like I have to protect myself the whole time.
Yes.
But I can say I'm going. I'm going.
Right. And the thing about it is, you do love them. You do love them.
Say that again? Yeah.
The truth is, you do love them. You do care about them. Now, are you having a warm, fuzzy feeling right at the moment? Perhaps not. But you're not a liar when you say, I love you. I love you guys, and I just need a little time. I love you guys, but, you know, I'm committed to my meditation practice, so I need to go do that now. And over time, they will begin to sense that you are taking care of yourself, and it's not about them. They don't need to take it personally. And you'll get more comfortable with it. And you will stop feeling guilty, because you're going to just say no to guilt. Because that's nothing but conditioning trying to make you feel bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, great.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. How much longer are you there?
Just until Monday. Altogether, I just planned it, so I'm here for my dad's 70th birthday, and then it's only like a 10-day trip, and then I'll come to your practice retreat right after.
Good. That's perfect timing. Good.
I know, so it's getting me through also.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we'll get a report on how it went for you. But the main thing is just to focus on not letting those voices beat you up. Just your mantra is, I'm doing the best I can do. I'm doing the best I can do. I choose compassion and loving kindness, and I'm doing the best I can do. And just hold on to that, because you are. Because it's true. You are.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Get some sleep. Thank you.
Hopefully.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. So many more helpful tips in there, Sherry. Just so helpful.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting us ready for the relationships email class coming up.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, this is all practice for us for that, isn't it? Because it's all relationship, isn't it? It's all relationship. And one of the things I heard tonight that I liked best was the mantra of, I'm doing the best that I can do. And the voices, of course, are just going to shriek. No, you're not. No, you're not doing the best that you could do. You should be doing this, 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 and this. And to realize that is not correct, that is not helpful, and I'm not listening. Because what is true is, I am doing the very best that I can do. And as soon as I can do better, by golly, I'll do better. That has always been the case, and it will always be the case.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Fabulous. Super helpful. We can all practice with for the week then.
There you go. A mantra we can share.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. Great. Talk to you then.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Good night.